Time to welcome into the program one of our favorites on the show from Defector.com, Defector Media, The Distraction. He's the lovely and talented and not the least bit jowly, David Roth.
That's very kind of you to say, Rich. Although on the radio, I can go ahead and just pretend that's true and no one will know.
I don't know. I'm looking at two of you here side by each, as we say in Maine, on the social media. You both look delightful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That is probably going to make it really hard for me to keep coming into the office on a regular basis now that thing exists. We got a cardboard cutout of a photo taken of me next to my father-in-law's house on Deer Isle, next to the gross gas canister from the local propane supplier. And yeah, they decided to make a big cutout of that for our website's first birthday party. Because it got here so late, it just lives in the office now, which means that I have to work from home or look at myself making that dead-eyed thumbs up, for the rest of my time here.
That is, look, even for a good-looking guy like you, that's frightening.
Yeah, no, it's too much. It's also slightly taller than me, which, like, that is just an added element of ominousness that I don't appreciate.
Well, by the way, happy anniversary, 1 year for Defector.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's, like, exciting and also just, in general, kind of bizarre to be doing something and feeling like I know that I'll be able to do it again next year. Like, professionally, that is not an experience I've had very often.
Well, isn't it something, though, to have actual creative people running an organization?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely, I'm sure, from the business side, come up with a different way of doing it. Like, we're very lucky that we have, a guy who is competent in those areas and can help us with stuff like that. But I think that, yeah, I mean, we've learned basically, like, there's a lot of stuff at all the bigger places that I've worked that is mysterious and, like, sort of purposefully left mysterious, you know, that, like, marketing or, like, just guys in, like, shiny shirts closing deals in offices and stuff. Like, I'm assuming that what they do helps pay my salary, but I never really knew what they did. And so, like, we've been, the whole first year of us sort of trying to teach ourselves how to do an acceptably okay version of that. And it turns out it's not, like, I think it's very hard to do well, but, like, even blog.
Oh, did we lose David?
Oh, no. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Well,
Can you
hear me? You faded. It was just a bump, just a speed bump. It's all good. It's all good.
Sorry
now. Wonderful piece that you wrote about last weekend's college football and reactions, which I think from a lot of people are a little bit ambivalent.
Yeah. I mean, I felt kind of ambivalent about it in a way. And so is it really echoey where I am? Can you hear me okay?
I hear you fine. Yeah.
All right, good. I've been moving around the office. Sorry about that. Yeah, I mean, it was like, there was a part of me that was really thrilled just to see it looking the way that I sort of, in my mind's eye, see college football looking, you know, which is like a rowdy student section singing along to some song that came out like when I was in middle school. For whatever reason, it seems like House of Pain has retained its power over young drunk people for like basically the entire time I've been alive. But yet at the same time, it's like, you know, this last year, you know, like just seeing people that close to each other, even if you know, as in these student sections, those students are overwhelmingly vaccinated, is still like, it's jarring, you know? So it's like, I imagine that we will get used to it again, but like, I don't think I realized until Saturday just how much I had like gotten unused to it.
Yeah, and it's funny because I've watched baseball all summer long and seeing crowds and for the most part haven't really batted an eye at that, but something about all those people right up in each other's grill that made me twitch a little.
Yeah, that's really the difference. I mean, like, watching people at a baseball game is like, yeah, they're all sitting there, but, like, people on a bus are also sitting next to each other. It's oftentimes, I mean, just going by the Mets, it's often about the same energy level as well. Like, there's really only so much, you know, yelling or like communal stuff that's involved. But I mean, you see this from calling Maine games. I think that like it really is like a time where everybody's sort of together in a way that like really is special, even if you don't care for college football. And I'm not like a gonzo college football guy. I just think that that's like it's the togetherness that I miss, you know. And like it was nice to see people having fun again, even if it did feel like 30% wrong.
Yeah, I'm with you on both ends of that spectrum. I'm there with you. I hate to bring them up, but you mentioned them first. The Mets just find a way to be Metsy, even Even in different ways, it's always new and yet uniquely Mets.
So I have a long, obviously, history with them, and this was the first time the bit where the players decided to unite around booing the fans with their hands was really new to me. And I thought I'd kind of seen everything. Like, I was like alive when like Brett Saberhagen was spraying bleach on autograph seeking children from Super Soaker. And even then, it was the sort of thing where like, yeah, the Mets are the only team that's going to do that. But like, also how much more overt could your disrespect for your fans be? And then it turns out here that it's actually, they just like really, hate us, which is tough. I mean, I guess they've been trying to send that message, by blowing games to the Marlins repeatedly. But it was nice to see it spelled out so concretely, I guess.
See, now my perspective, and I was just talking about this a few minutes ago, part of me wants to cheer for the Red Sox. They're overachievers, the scrappy little guys. And then they all keep getting shut down for COVID, Chris Sale now, because apparently they don't really care enough to make sure they all do the right thing. And so how do I pull for a team like that?
I've been kind of wondering about the Red Sox story, too, just because there was something where Hunter Renfrow was saying that, like, basically MLB was like, just stop talking about it. You know, we'll just treat the symptoms, whatever, but, like, we can't really afford this right now. And, like, I guess that shouldn't be surprising, but it seemed like baseball was pretty committed to seeming responsible with it. And, like, I mean, the Mets are under that 85% threshold. I think the Red Sox are over it, right?
No, they're under it, too.
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, it is very frustrating in that regard, too, because, like, you know, obviously I'm past the age where I'm assuming that these ballplayers are, like, actually my friends that live in the television and play sports for me. And yet at the same time, like, you want to be able to cheer for them. And it's so much, obviously, you know, like, it, in the same way that, like, politics always finds a way to sneak into sports, it's like, just, like, learning that a player is unvaccinated, and in the case of, especially with a lot of the Phillies, are militantly unvaccinated,
right.
That's like their whole, like basically much more than winning the NL East this year, like the important thing to them is like preserving that purity of essence or whatever. And that, if I were a Phillies fan, I would be as bummed out by that as I am by the fact that their bullpen is the worst maybe that I've ever seen.
All right, so help me with this, and maybe I'm asking the wrong guy. I try to be patient for a while, but I'm not. I'm not a patient person by nature. But now that we're back at school and I've got to deal with it there to a certain degree, and then out in the world and we're all masked up again, and here we go. I'm broadcasting a game remotely tomorrow. How do I avoid the white-hot rage that I really want to feel for these nitwits that won't go out and do the right thing?
You are for sure asking the wrong guy. It's really, it's tough too, because I think, you know, so when we were in Maine earlier this summer, it went during the time we were there from being very normal, you know, like people not wearing masks in stores because everybody was vaccinated and, you know, the R in the state was under one and everything, to being like the way that it is now, you know, where everybody has to basically go back to the way that it was. I mean, not even last summer. I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways, people are more paranoid and more restricted about it. And it just doesn't have to be this way. And it's very difficult for me to kind of like, there's a part of it that, you know, last summer, I guess, like as much of a respite as we were sort of getting from things, there was still, I think, this sense that everybody was, you know, for all of the other things that made life difficult last summer, just broadly and, you know, in the culture, everybody was kind of in it together, or at least suffering the same stuff in more or less the same ways.
Mm.
And at this point, it has this kind of energy to it of like a hostage situation. Like, it's hard for me not to feel this resentment when I know that, like, you know, people who are unwilling to inconvenience themselves for a few minutes for an FDA-approved thing that everybody knows works, like, it just is such a colossal waste. And it all feels like it's completely born of vanity. Like, I can't, I mean, I guess I can humor religious objection and stuff like that, but all of this other stuff where it's just basically someone who's like, you can't infringe on my right to be annoying, it's the most important thing in the world to me. Like, that person, it's really hard for me to be as magnanimous or patient or not rageful as I would like to be.
And I'm going to use your term, and I don't know if it was just to be applied to those people, but I'm going to slap it on them because I love it. Aggrieved dingleberries.
I'm trying to bring dingleberry back. I think that dingbat, there's a lot of words that like this begin with that ding sound that have sort of fallen out of favor, and I feel like they deserve a lot better. But yeah, I mean, it really is like, there's a lot of, I missed a lot of this last night. I was sort of blessedly offline, but it seems like that's the response to this, you know, the idea of like an employer mandate on vaccinations. Is people just, I guess they need to get it out of their system. It's hard to feel like somebody else has power over you, especially in a culture where that's like the one thing that, you know, is actually agreed upon as a weakness. But like, I don't know, the power to like threaten to quit your job if someone makes you do something to make your workplace safer, like, you do have that power. But like, if you don't quit your job, then you should be quiet and get the shot. And if you want to quit, go ahead. I mean, I think that'd be great.
All right, away from that for a moment, is there anything more perfect in our universe than the fact that on the 20th anniversary of 9/11, Donald Trump will be a commentator on some wackadoodle Evander Holyfield geezer boxing thing?
I love it so much. I'm a little worried about Evander. I saw some footage of him working out on the pad the other day, and he's 58 years old, and I'm not going to say that he wouldn't knock me out in a very vigorous fashion. He certainly would, but like, it would take longer than it should. And I'm a blogger, you know, and like the rest of it is, but the idea of Trump doing that and kind of like just calling in via Zoom to be like, we love it when they fight, they love the punch and kick, like just kind of like reassociating in the way that he does. There was a moment where I like a lot of people that knew about this, I kind of just stared at the poster for a little while thinking about all the things that had to happen to make it possible. And I feel like this is something that he could have been doing if he was ever president. That like, this is actually what he would have been doing instead of being president had he lost in 2016. And in this case, it's like, I guess it's good that he's just sort of jumped right back into it. And he's back at the, you know, Hard Rock Hotel in Seminole, Florida. Like, that is in some ways where he belongs.
And don't you, I feel like, I don't think he's going to run again. That's fundraising. I think this is the future for him of doing this and telemarketing. He's going to be a much more sleazy Ron Popeil.
Yeah, I think that there is that Ron Popeil is a really good call, especially because they're both people that kind of have that like look a little bit like enough like roast chickens themselves. Obviously with Popeil, you got the whole association there where you're kind of like, I don't like how crispy this guy is. Like, that's a visually unsettling thing for me. But he, I think, like, of all the things that, you know, presidents do after serving in office, you know, like, there are more and less good ways to do it. Like, of course, Jimmy Carter is going to build a bunch of houses because, like, those are his values. And, of course, Trump is going to be, like, a casino greeter at a casino with his own name on it because that is, like, that is his highest aspiration, is to, like, just have someone hand him $100.
All right, I have to ask you, and this is so far away from anything we've been talking about, so it's out of left field a little bit, but I was looking for some stuff the other night and going through some old boxes, and I found my, from, I don't know, 1970-something, my old Mattel handheld electric football game.
The vibrating metal one? Or no, like a little...
The
like
little one that had the little green and red lights on it that you held in your hand. It was like a pocket calculator, but was sort of also football.
Yeah, I think that I know what you're talking about. I do believe that I've seen this.
And it man, it took me back. But I wanted to know. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say the versions of things that children have been asked to, until recent years, but like kids were asked to accept as being like football, were incredible. The one that I was remembering was just a bunch of guys on like a vibrating metal sheet. And I don't even know how you played the game. All of my friends had it.
I've always said I was 10 when I got that electric football game. And that was the first moment in my life when I realized the stark difference between promise and reality. I believed those TV commercials, and then, man, set those guys up, plugged it in, watched them shake, and watched my offensive linemen essentially just square dance. And then the realization that you could throw the football the equivalent of about 3.5 miles, but the chance of it ever hitting a receiver, no, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I guess in some ways, like, it's a good way to sort of introduce kids if you want to, like, get them started on, like, watching actual football. Like, they would have to already care about it to be willing to put up with a game that's that crappy. But otherwise, it's just sort of thing where, like, the idea of, like, doing something like that and being like, well, this is unpleasant. I don't like it. And then they're like, well, here, maybe you'd enjoy watching, like, just a crappy ACC game that suddenly is going to seem like the most beautiful and well-executed thing you've ever seen.
What I loved is the fact that you could, as I remember, you could order different uniforms already on them, or you could paint them yourself. Well, I wasn't going to paint them myself. And I believe I got, I think it was the Packers and the Los Angeles Rams. And to take them out of that package and to see the greens and the yellows and the yellows and the blues, and like, that does look like Roman Gabriel in a strange way. Wow, how about that? And then it had a scoreboard. It was cardboard. I had to turn the dials myself, but that was the coolest thing. And it made the fact that it was a lousy game, well, a lot easier to take in the big picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's basically, it was something that you're supposed to, like, my sister, when she's instructing her kids not to touch things, calls things a look upon. That is basically what this game is. That, like, you set all that stuff up, it does look cool, you know, the field is green, you got the scoreboard, but, like, the moment you flip that switch, it starts to suck.
Right, right. Well, so I wanted to ask you if you had, as a kid, a favorite sports-oriented toy.
So I had, I mean, in terms of, like, video game stuff, less so. I had a game that was, like, on the, like, very early Apple personal computer that I had, where I would painstakingly enter the lineup of, for whatever reason, I played as the Baltimore Orioles, even though I was not a fan of theirs. So I just remember, like, as a middle schooler, like, typing Mike Devereaux's name in very slowly and being like, what, like, this is a good thing for me to do. Very smart. Like, I need to have, like, a completely accurate bullpen or else this will all have been to waste. But in terms of, like, actual, like, toys, I think this is a little bit later in the game, but the Nerf Turbo, which was,
oh, yes,
a small grooved ball that you could throw, like, even as a sort of a spindly middle schooler, that you could run just, like, 80-yard fly patterns with your buddies and more or less get the ball there. It was extremely gratifying.
I remember that. And I was a little bit older, but it was great because I have Trump-like hands.
Yeah, well, throwing an actual regulation football, I saw some friends earlier this summer, and they brought one to, like, just to a picnic to throw around. And I was really excited. And then, like, as soon as I saw it was, like, an NFL-sized football, I was like, well, this is, like, I'm going to have to run, like, the wing tee with my buddies. Like, I'm going to be throwing them option pitches. The idea of overhanding this ball that barely fits in my hands 5 yards or 8 yards is really, like, asking a lot for me at this stage.
Now I'm taking a closer look at the cardboard cutout to see the size of those digits. Oh, yeah. Okay, I got it. Yeah.
They're pretty normal-sized hands. I'm just saying that they're not, you know, Aaron Rodgers-sized hands.
Right. Well, he's a freak. We know that.
I mean, I have a much happier personal life. I'm not really, like, complaining about it that much, but yeah.
Are you a Jeopardy fan?
I mean, I am. I think I followed the Mike Richards stuff in just kind of, like, with morbid fascination. Not so much because I was invested in who was the host, but because I couldn't believe that this one random goon was really going for it. Especially when it seemed like, from what I've seen, the fans really wanted LeVar Burton, and then they had all these other, you know, and Rodgers apparently really did do a good job as the host. And then, you know, this guy swooping in Dick Cheney style at the last minute and be like, I think what they want is the TV executive, the color of skim milk, like, tells awkward jokes at work. That's, I think, what most people want. Wouldn't they want to watch that on TV?
There are a segment of people who do indeed watch that on another channel.
I was going to say, that's true. Like, if you want, it's basically the same percentage of people that would be like, yeah, I'd like to see Jim Jordan host Jeopardy.
Right. Oh,
that
yeah.
Would be really
yeah.
fun energy.
Which, of course, he would only do if they told him he didn't have to wear a blazer.
Yeah. That's, I love that look, man. This is, like, such a recurring bit of mine at this point that I feel weird bringing it up. But of all the congressmen that look like college basketball coaches who just got blown out on homecoming night by, like, Creighton. He has some of the most, like, disappointed Mac coach energy of anyone that I could even dream of ever holding office.
Right. Like, I'm thinking maybe but Central Michigan, Toledo.
Yeah. And he's, like, giving a press. He's, like, getting really snappy with, like, someone from the student newspaper after Evansville beat them by 19. He's like, well, were you out there? There's this man in the arena that matters. And he's like, well, like, no one knows where his blazer went. He lost it during the beginning part of the second half.
That is perfect. David Roth from Defector.com. David, happy anniversary to you and all the folks at Defector. Great talking with you, as always. Have a good weekend, and we'll do it again
soon.
Thank
you very much, man. You too. Take care.
David Roth on Downtown.